Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. We'll be talking about, let's see, what are we talking about? We're talking about week beginning January 4th going through the 10th of January. Plus, we're going to talk about 11th of January through the 17th of January, since they are really short weeks for me because I did a lot of work that week. But before we get to that, I'm going to be talking about some back issues that were purchased. Let's see what we got here. We got the Flash 182. This is a really cool cover. It said, "The Flash is super speed phobia," and he's like wiping his brow and he's throwing his boots into the trash and saying, "I can't run again. I'm afraid it will kill me." So it's like one of those Hero No More things. So he's got a fear. Somebody gives him a fear of speed, which is really cool. And then this is a cover I really love. This is Flash 198. It's a 15 center, and it says he's on his knees like he's praying up to, and he's got tears in his eyes. And there's three women in the background. They look like they're crying too, and he's praying and he's saying, "They say I'm the Flash. If only it were true, I could help them. Please make it come true, God." It's a very unique Gil Kane cover. I like it a lot. So then we get into some Marvel books, which is unusual. And we got Fantastic Four, number 48. This is a huge pickup for me because it's the first appearance of Galactus and the Silver Surfer. So it's a really nice copy, and I got it for a really good deal. And it's got the Watcher on the cover. Really cool pickup. And then I'm getting very, very close to completing my Daredevil run. And this is Daredevil 16, and it has Spider-Man on the cover. And it just says, "Enter Spider-Man." So those are some acquisitions, and now to our weekly reads. Okay, and welcome back to Mike M's Weekly Reads. I'm going to do 2 weeks this week, and this is going to be week beginning January 4th, 2016 through January 10th, 2016. And that was a really, really small week of reading, and I think it's because it was my first week back at work. I don't remember. It was so long ago. I was really busy. Matter of fact, I'm real busy lately that I haven't read too much. So I'm going to do 2 weeks here, but I'm going to start with this first week. And if I remember correctly, I was on business travel this week, and I had taken a stack full of comics with me, and I got very, very ill. So I didn't get through anything but one comic, and then I started reading a trade. And the trade was right before I got really ill when I was on business travel. So starting at the 4 out of 5s, I have The Shadow number 0, and this was a Cullen Bunn one-shot, which I really, really liked. It tied into Houdini and Houdini's wife, and there was like a magic cult that was after something that Houdini had. Like, it was like a formula for living eternal, like in the spirit realm or something like that. And the spirit, he had trained the spirit, by the way, which is really cool. You know, you have Houdini training the spirit. And the spirit had to come protect Mrs. Houdini. It was a cool story. And it drove me to Wikipedia to find out more about Houdini's wife, because I didn't know much. I remember as a kid, I don't know much about Houdini, but there was a movie, like a made-for-TV movie, when I was really young. It must have been in the 70s, and I have to look it up sometime, but it was Houdini, and it kind of scared me at the time because I was young, but it dealt with like him living in the afterlife and stuff like that. And I really enjoyed it, like, as a kid. Like, it made an impression on me because I still remember it to this day. And I've always, you know, it's something that I'd like to research more up on at some point in time. I think there's another crossover in Dynamite that deals with Houdini, so I need to look those up because I did buy them. But this Shadow book was really, really good. The art was really tight, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. So it was a 4 out of 5. And the next thing that we had was Saga of the Swamp Thing, and these are all there are 4 out of 5s. And this is the Alan Moore saga. It started with issue 20 and worked its way to 27. And this is like the first volume. This was the trade that I read off the spinner rack. I think I must have read, I only owned like two of these, and I read them. So rereading them now, like I didn't even remember a lot of them. There was only pieces of them. It was a pure joy to read these. Issue 20 finished a storyline that was written by somebody else, and it felt a little jarring, but Alan Moore ran with it. He completed it and then started his own story, which was really cool. And it dealt with a General Sutherland, I believe his name was. It's just so long ago since I read it. And he was looking to capture the Swamp Thing, and he was using the Floronic Man, Woodrow guy. He hired him, and at this point he was in his human form, and he hired him to study the Swamp Thing if he captured him. And he, sure enough, he captured him, and they imprisoned him, and he gave him a certain amount of time to figure out more about the Swamp Thing, and he did. He reported him. He said, "You know, the Swamp Thing is Woodrow found out is that Alec Holland was it wasn't really Swamp Thing. That when he died in the marsh, you know, in the swamp, that his personality, it's like the plants have a personality and." And they can remember things, and the plants kind of absorbed him, and they got all of his memories, and he was like a plant. So it kind of changed his origin, Alan Moore did, and Steven Bissett did a lot of the art, and it was pretty amazing. But I keep getting texts from work. It's distracting me. It's distracting my train of thought. But yeah, and it's Sunday and I'm getting text. It sucks. But the story was awesome because Woodrow found this out. He reported it to Sutherland. Sutherland said, "Oh, you're a nutcase. You know, I'm gonna fire you. You haven't done what I asked." Woodrow injects himself with stuff. He becomes like a plant god. And then he writes a Justice League story, which is like a two-part story arc where the Justice League can't do anything to stop, you know, Woodrow. He's become like a plant god, and only Swamp Thing can intervene. But it's really cool his take on the Justice League. You could see that he doesn't think much of these superheroes. Alan Moore doesn't. He's like, he wants to deconstruct them. He sees them for their more of their flaws than he does for their abilities to help people. But there was that Justice League story, and then it got into a demon arc, and I ranked number 25 the highest just because of the way Alan Moore told it. It was so much like a Jason Blood story, but it was so awesome. It was, I highly recommend any of these books. And it ended with a demon team up with Swamp Thing, and I really can't wait to crack into the other stuff and actually purchase the single issues because I'm missing out of these. Like I said, I only had two, so I would like to you know, finish this run at some point. I was in and out of Vertigo. I started with Saga of the Swamp Thing. I completed the first volume of Swamp Thing. And then, so yeah, I'm coming in and out, and work keeps texting me, so I'm gonna pause. Okay, I'm back. And, I got texts from work, and it's Sunday. Yeah, it is. And it was good news, though. I don't have to go to work tonight. So I'm like, Yes, I had to go in for a few hours to take care of some things, and they had texted me to be there at a certain time tonight, and they called it off. So I am happy. I feel free. I feel like I'm gonna have my a full weekend, and I can finish this podcast with a smile on my face. So yeah, I was talking about Swamp Thing, and highly recommend the Alan Moore. But I need to really work on this collection, if especially if I'm gonna finish all the DC books since 1973. I have completed the first series. I have his first appearance in House of Mystery. I have a lot of Saga of the Swamp Thing, and then I stopped collecting it around the Alan Moore time. I don't know why, but it was during the spinner rack days. Like, I had picked up Saga of the Swamp Thing off the spinner rack, so I don't know if it was like in the midst of transition from the drugstore where I'd get my comic books to a real comic book store, which I think I discovered in, oh man, it must have been 8th or 9th grade. I think it was 8th grade. 8th grade. I remember, I didn't know comic shops existed, and one of my friends invited me to his house, and he had boxes. I didn't even know like comic boxes existed. This is what how naive I was. I didn't buy supplies. I would put them in a box. I didn't have bags or boards. I would just buy comics and put them in a box after I read them and read them over and over again from the drugstore. And then I went to his house and I saw a comic box. And I was like, "What is this?" And he said, "I keep comics in it." And I'm like, "What? There's comics and there's bags to protect your comics and boards? What is this? This is new to me." And I started to look through his collection and I was like, "Oh yeah, I have some of this," and blah blah. And then I got to Marvel Fanfare and a couple other ones and I said, "Whoa, I have never seen this shit before. What the hell's going on here? These are never at the drugstore. Where do you get these from?" And he says, "Well, I drive off to this comic shop called Nostalgia, it was at the time. It changed its name to Tall Tales in New Mexico." And I was like, "Wow." And then I told my mom and dad about it. And no, actually, it wasn't Tall Tales. It was Don's Paperback Bookstore where he used to go. That was the first comic shop. And this was a bookstore that had a lot of comics. And so he told me about this. And man, when I hit my first allowance, I said, "Dad, can you please take me to this place? It's on San Mateo." It's still there, by the way. I went to that comic shop and I got all kinds of comics the first time I was there because I had just mowed a lot of grass and, mowed a lot of lawns and got my allowance, and I went there and I picked off the shelf like a bunch of books that I never heard of. And this might have been the time when I just was overwhelmed with other companies and other publishers and obscure titles. And then I discovered that back issues existed. Like, I one of the first collections I went through and said, "I gotta have these," is I had picked up Wolverine, the 4-issue miniseries, off the spinner rack. And this was 60 cents. Comics are 60 cents. I remember this specifically. And man, I loved Wolverine. And the other miniseries I picked up was the Marvel Hercules series by Bob Layton. And I picked that up. And I was like, "Oh, this is fucking awesome." And when I was going through back issues, I saw Hercules in a team called the Champions, and I was like, "What the fuck is this?" And they were all in bags and stuff like that at this bookstore in long boxes. And I remember, yeah, I got a few like new comics like Judge Dredd from Eagle Comics and a couple other ones off the shelf. But I was like, "I want this. This is Hercules. This and he's on a team with Ghost Rider and Black Widow and Angel and Iceman." I said, "I gotta get this series," and I got the series, and I was so blown away. But that was like, I think that's why I missed a lot of Saga of the Swamp Things and Alan Moore's run, is because I discovered so much and limited money. I mean, all my money that I got towards comics was based on allowance, and it was mowing lawns, including our own. My dad would pay me to mow the lawn, and I mowed three of the neighbors' lawns. And yeah, I would make like 10, 20 bucks. And back then, that 10, 20 bucks would buy a lot of comics. So, yeah, that's a big tangent. But that was for that 1 week. And so for the totals, we had 9 comics that week. Not too many. One Dynamite and 8 DC. And then we're going to jump into week beginning January 11th to January 17th. Again, 5 is I love it, 4 is I really like it, 3 is I like it, 2 is I did not like it, 1 is I hated it. And the breakdown is as follows. We had a total of 20 comics. We had one from Rebellion. If you don't know who Rebellion is, they publish magazines mostly. 2000 AD. Judge Dredd magazine, and the comic that I read on here was a comic that was in the Judge Dredd magazine. So we have one Rebellion, Marvel had 10, IDW had 1, Dark Horse had 1, Creature had 1, Comics Tribe had 2, Black Mask had 3, and 451 Media had 1. So we're going to start at the 3 out of 5s. Yes, we had some 3 out of 5s this week. This was my first introduction to Bubba the Redneck Werewolf, and it was a 3 out of 5. It was from Creature Entertainment. It started off as kind of funny, like a parody on Comic Cons, but then it just dragged on, and I was hoping it was over. Once I got three-fourths of the way, I was like, this is really good and funny, and then the joke just started to get old. Bubba's been around before. He's been around and was published in 2003 through 2006 from a publisher called Brass Bale. And it was a creator, Mitch Hyman. That's an interesting name. But Mitch Hyman comes back in 2014 publishing with Creature. I've enjoyed a lot of Creature's books. Most of the Creature stuff that I've gotten has been from comic conventions, and they usually publish like one book a year. But recently they've been publishing a lot of their stuff through previews, but it's kind of like older material that that's been available through conventions for a long time. Sorry, I needed to take a drink. But this is also by Mitch Hyman, and the artist is Roberto Torres, but cover is fucking what drives you to this book. It's an amazing painted cover. It is a brilliant cover. The content inside wasn't as great, but it was entertaining, so I gave it a 3 out of 5. I was entertained. And then I finished Ghost Riders, 3 out of 4, issues 3 and 4. This was a Battle World series. I had really loved all new Ghost Rider, or you could say Ghost Driver, with Robbie Reyes. That series really, really grew on me as I read and read and read. I became really invested into this character. And this series kind of took off with him. And the same writer, and it used other ghost writers from the past, the Western one, the female ghost writer, Danny Ketch, and all the ghost writers from the past. Johnny Blaze, of course. There's been other ones too from Spirits of Vengeance that were in there. There was even some that I didn't even recognize. And it had Robbie Reyes's brother who was handicapped. But it didn't hit the same emotional tone or adventure that that first series had. It was interesting, and he was trying to escape Battle World, and I just wish it was more of what I was used to. And I think it was like just throwing a bunch of other ghostwriters in the book to sell it, And, as like, they raced for entertainment on Battle World. All the Ghost Raiders would start and they'd have a race, and Robbie Reyes was usually the winner on a lot of them. Whereas, if you get real, Johnny Blaze would kick his ass. Like, Johnny Blaze even showed up in All New Ghost Rider. But, yeah, it was good. And then Ex Mortis, which I think I rated that one a 4 out of 5, or maybe even a 5 out of 5 from 451 Media. It dropped to a 3 out of 5 because this issue, Black and White, was nowhere near as intriguing as the way it started off. It's like Creature Commandos, but it just, this was like the assembling of the Monster Squad team, and I guess I had a little bit of problem with the art because there was like three characters that I couldn't tell them apart. The monsters you can definitely tell apart, but there was three human-looking characters I couldn't tell. It's a good read, and I'm curious to see. I liked the first one a lot because it had a mixture of the good and the bad, whereas this guy was this one was just like the ally unit forming and training, trying to get trained so they can go after the Nazis. But yeah, and then the Valkyries. This was a story in the future, rebellion. It had a comedic tones to it. Very sexual in nature, by the way. It was like a female Amazons living on Earth, and man, they were just having sex all the time. They didn't like men too much, but this one escapes and she kind of gets brainwashed and taken over, or actually has the spirit of one of the male doctors who's trying to tell that their world's in danger. Because of his son, and they go on an adventure. She becomes one of the Valkyries. Like, there's several Valkyries that are like a police force, and she's kind of like a rich girl that is royalty, or she might not like be like immediate royalty, but if enough people passed away, she would get to be like the queen. But so she's like, somebody of wealth and power who seems spoiled rotten, who gets injected with the spirit of this older professor to try to save her world. And he's a male, so she starts thinking even differently. And it's a really cool adventure space opera. If you like stuff like Justice League, International, or like Keith Giffen and J.M.W. Mateus type books, I think you'll enjoy this Valkyries. So that finishes the 3 out of 5s, and then we get into the 4 out of 5s. And I read another Battle World title to finish it off. It was Thor's number 4, which wrapped up the criminal investigation. The Thors are the police force, and they're trying to find out who's murdering all the people. Jane Foster's in every incarnation. I think there's even a Donald Blake that's murdered. And it has every incarnation of Thor's, Frog Thor and Beta Ray Bill, and this one ends. It's a pretty satisfactory ending. It was a really good 4-issue miniseries. I highly recommend it if you're a fan of any the female Thor that's currently there, or any of the other past Thors. I think you'll really like it. Then we get into something from Comics Tribe. It was a book I read a long, long, long time ago, but I had to order it. It was a free comic book day. It was called Epic, and I got the free comic book day a long time ago, and I read it, and then I had to make a purchase of one because it was already out. Because I read the free comic book day like months and months after the series already started, and I actually bought directly from Comics Tribe. I bought number 0, which is a reprint of the free comic book day. It might have some extra material. It's got an embossed cover. It's a pretty really nice cover. It's a really thick cover stock. And then they had number 1, and it's pretty much like an invincible character. It's like a high school student that gets powers, and He doesn't seem to have any weaknesses, you know, and it feels like an invincible slash savage dragon book. And he's only got one weakness, and his only weakness is he's hitting puberty big time. And anytime he sees a girl or gets distracted or sees anything, any woman that's sexy, he loses his powers. He'll fall midstream in flight or lose his superhuman powers. So it's a fun series. If you like Savage Dragon, and if you like Invincible, I would say try Epic. It comes out very, very infrequently. So there's like only like 3 issues out. But when I tweeted it, they said they're still working on it. But they lost one of their artists to another company that could pay them more. That's the way artists are, you know. They do books pretty cheap, and then they find their way into the industry, and then they don't do it cheap anymore. So that was Epic. And then we get into another series called Bloodhound Crowbar Medicine. This is an old 90s property from DC, but it's being published by Dark Horse. Bloodhound was published in 2004 through 2005, written by Dan Jolly and Leonard Cook. It was about an ex-cop, but he's a convict, and he's got a reputation for hunting down metahumans. And it was an awesome series. Highly recommend it. I think it's traded by Dark Horse, but back in this time period, DC was playing around with creator-owned stuff, and they've done it in the past, like with The Mighty. The Mighty is a book being published by Dark Horse, but DC had it back in the day. And there's a few other instances of things that I think they've let expire or let the owners retain their properties back, or they had some kind of like written contract where they could get them back if DC failed to use them. And I guess Bloodhound's one of those cases. Well, Bloodhound Crowbar Medicine is published in 2013 as a 5-issue miniseries, and it continues off with that first one. But he's now living with like his sister, and he's like the uncle to this little girl, and he's working with the FBI and to hunt down metahumans. And there's like a metahuman outbreak where this guy kind of like loses his powers, and they need his help to stop him. And this guy is a good guy. Like, he's not killing people because he's malicious or anything. He's just losing control of his powers. It kind of reminded me of like Damage, if you know DC Comics as Damage. He didn't really control his powers very well and just would blow up shit all the time. Well, that's kind of like what this villain would do, and they needed Bloodhound to go after him, and he did find him. And it turns out this doctor is giving regular people powers because he lost his daughter, but I can get into that in future episodes. This one's kind of the introduction where they introduce a general who actually needs Bloodhound's powers, but I think that actually happens in issue 2, and I only read issue 1, but I give it a 4 out of 5. It's good stuff from Dark Horse Entertainment. Let's see what else we got. We have Star Trek Starfleet Academy number 2. This series has been so much fun. It's got two time periods. One time period is our Captain Kirk and Spock and Uhura and all the team that we love from the films, the new incarnation. And they're in Starfleet Academy, and Uhura discovers this distress signal and is trying to track down stuff, but the Academy doesn't want her to find out anything. And they have a second year, which 2 years later they introduce a new team, and both of these areas are merging to solve a mystery in the story. So we'll see how the two different time periods. But the one thing is the characterizations of the new characters, Starfleet Academy, led by a Vulcan. It's just awesome. Like, I love a series where you like get introduced to characters and you like latch on to them, like, man, this character's interesting. Oh, this one's interesting too. And this like whole new team is really interesting. So I'd highly recommend it. I think it's by Mike Johnson. He does a lot of Star Trek stuff. Then we get into Superior Iron Man. This is the evil Iron Man that came out of the Axis, where it seems like there was a bomb blast and some of the heroes absorbed some of evil attributes of the villains. I didn't read that. I kind of sat that event out, but I kind of know that this one spun out of it and Tony's not quite himself. And it's awesome. This is a Tom Taylor written book, and it really took the attributes of Tony Stark's arrogance and ability to want to control things to the extreme. So, like, it's like, what if Tony Stark really became evil? He used the Extremis virus to basically let people become beautiful and successful using the Extremis virus, and he would hook them on it like it's a drug. And this dealt with this, and Pepper Potts was trying to stop him with like, I guess Tony had put his memory in old Iron Man suits or kept his and told Pepper to use them against him if something ever went wrong with him. So Pepper used like the Tony Stark personality in an Iron Man suit to try to stop himself, which is, it sounds weird, but it was awesome. A lot of the art was by Yildiray Cinar, and he was really, really good. And there had some other artists like L Laura Braga, but all the different artists that they had, they had similar styles, which was really cool. So I highly recommend Superior Iron Man, especially if you're a Tom Taylor fan. You read Injustice or All New Wolverine or Earth 2. He seems to like they seem to give him books where he could just cut loose and do his own thing, and he's really, really, really good at it. I'd highly recommend it. So the next book is 12 Reasons to Die. This is from Black Mask. I had read number one a long time ago. I read two through four now. I had put it aside as the trip for Christmas, and I never got around to reading it, but it was on my stack, and I started reading it, and I thought, well, I'm going to probably like it or not like it, and I fell in love with it, and it's a 5 out of 5. So Superior Iron Man is a 4 out of 5, and 12 Reasons to Die is a 5 out of 5 from Black Mask. And it actually has a rap connection to Ghostface Killer. It's like an album-inspired story, and it's really fascinating. It's about this cleaner slash mafia guy who joins this family, and he is really successful at his job. He's really good as a cleaner. Like, if you like Sopranos, you'll love this shit. And he's not afraid of anybody that he works for. He's real arrogant and he talks back to them. But the family does not want to lose him, but they also don't want to give him the power because they want to keep this mafiosa thing going on in the family, like blood. If you were a relative, you could do it, but this guy's an outsider. And it just gets really cool. It's awesome. And they have two stories. One of them, you don't think they're going to link, but they link at the end. The second story is about an album. This one guy's seeking these records out, and he has to seek out these records for some person that hired him. And each record is like haunted, where they play these records, and then this Ghostface killer comes and kills them. Well, I'll tell you when I wrap up the series next week, but it is really good. Black Mask is one to look out for some really deep quality stories, so check it out. So just to wrap it up, Black Mask had the top book of the week at 5 out of 5. The 4 out of 5s were Superior Iron Man, Three through nine, Star Trek, Starfleet Academy number two, Bloodhound, Crowbar, Medicine number one, Epic number zero and one, Thor's number four. Three out of fives were Valkyries from Rebellion, Ex Mortis from 451 Media, Ghost Riders from the Battle World, the Secret Wars stuff, three and four, and Bubba, the Redneck Werewolf number one, which is a one-shot about a Comic-Con. So that wraps it up. There are 20 books. I hope you enjoyed it. Oh, wait. I have forgot to give my contact information. Son of a bitch. But please retweet it. Retweet the show. Like it. Do whatever you can to support it. Let other people know about it. And if you want to reach me or have any questions or suggestions, it's mike@comicbooknoise.com is the email. And on the Twitters, it's Mike Myers Brunch. And the Facebook, you can reach me at Geek Brunch Podcast and click the like button and follow all the episodes there. Or you can go to the website at www.geekbrunch.com. podcast.com, and please leave an iTunes review if you can. I'd really appreciate it. Or tweet me and let me know that you listen. And iTunes reviews are really good for those that use iTunes, but you know, if you get it just from an RSS feed and don't want to use iTunes, that's fine too, but at least let me know that you like the show. I think next show I'll be giving away a trade paperback, so I'm thinking of a way to do that. So I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.